Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her My People show. I am your host, Mark Call, and I'll introduce things a bit differently this week by noting that I am coming to you live from the place that I generally come to you, which is basically out in the middle of nowhere, out in the boondocks on a mesa in southern Colorado at 9,000 feet, a long ways from the nearest Walmart even, but certainly the nearest Costco or Home Depot and the like. That's probably about the only thing that I don't like being out here so far away is the availability of a nearby Costco or Home Depot. But to be honest with you, the benefits more than make up for it. Well, today what I want to do is talk about some things that you'll see are peripherally at least related to that, and as well some other items that I have been struggling with for a few minutes here, trying to think, how am I going to approach this? Because certainly one of the things that I intend to try to wrap my arms around and do the best job I can of explaining is how far gone things already are in a large literally a myriad number of ways. But I also don't want this to sound too hopeless, and yet to some extent that is the hope within the hopelessness, because I have contended, and I'm going to make the case again today, that when it comes to both prophecy and the things that the deep state, Big Brother, the Orwellian nightmare that is being foisted upon a gullible, not just America, but a gullible world, is supposedly, I don't say supposedly, they fully intend to bring to pass, it must appear hopeless to anybody that would dare to resist their will. Basically, what they're going to show you, what they intend to try to prove, is that this is a juggernaut. You can't even stand the way. We'll kill you if we have to, but we fully intend to run you over. And you will not resist, kind of like the Borg from Star Trek. Resistance is futile. You will be assimilated, whether you like it or not. Well, part of the idea of being in the boondocks, at least, is to have a little bit more breathing room, but there is a lot more going on here as well, and those are the kind of things I want to try to outline. So again, the idea, tell you what's happening, give you the best impression that I can of just how big the scope is, and understand up front that it is supposed to appear hopeless, so that most people simply won't resist. Go along to get along. Hey, there's plenty of bread and circuses too. Isn't that the way it was in the old Roman Empire? You can't resist Rome. You might as well give up, because they'll kill you. So let's start a quick review of just some of the things in the news, as I often do just this week. I heard some interesting feedback from a number of sources, primary among them the guy that does the Common Sense Show, Dave Hodges, who points out he has a number of sources within the Border Patrol and Customs and Border Protection, you know, the agency that once upon a time, at least, was supposed to guard the border. Now, that's not what they do anymore. Now, basically, they process the thousands of people a day that come across the border, turn themselves in and say, I want to suck at the public teat and have all kinds of rights that you American peons don't have anymore. So, yeah, to Border Patrol, I guess you could say it certainly does appear hopeless. The message that Hodges was passing on, and he's not unique. I've heard other witnesses saying similar things. Border Patrol and the people in that job category are, for the most part, very demoralized. It's not just that they're losing big time and not even doing the job that they thought they had signed up for. They're processing people and basically becoming nannies for the nanny state rather than trying to protect the borders. And they're thwarted not only by their management, but their socialist politicians, which maybe is the very same thing, that essentially want the borders to be overrun. So, again, here's an obvious case where it is supposed to appear hopeless, and Big Brother is, whether they'll admit it or not, literally pushing that point of view. Saw another poll in the last few days saying that in Germany, at least, where it seems like more people having had an understanding of what the Nazi takeover looked like, most of them have passed, but at least there are no doubt a number of Germans around who can remember talking to their grandfather, or in some cases great-grandfathers, and being told what it was like in the early 1930s. And Well, maybe they're passing along and saying, look, it's happening again. Because the poll said 82% of Germans fear that Gestapo-like consequences await them if they dare to speak out. And, of course, the problem is they're probably very much right. One more item, I guess, and that is I will turn to Scripture and mention something that I actually, as I was looking up the verse, I'm thinking, okay, he will save us. I remember, where did I see this? Oh, yeah. Talked about it not too long ago on this this very show. Isaiah chapter 33, verse 22. This is the place that the founders referenced when they set up the tripartite, I'll get it, form of government, where there was a separation of powers, legislative, executive, and judicial branches. Used to be that every school child knew that. Nowadays, they've been dumbed down to the point where, like the occasional cortex in New York, they don't have a clue anymore what the three forms of government, three branches of government, were supposed to have been when they were separated. Now we have lots of branches of government, and of course, as Madison pointed out, tyranny, when all three of those branches are combined within a single entity, like an executive branch agency, IRS, ATF, FBI, you name it, bunch of, tyrannical organizations that get to play judge, jury, executioner, and make their own laws, as well as have their own courts. Well, anyway, Isaiah 33 said the following, right? For Yahuwah is our judge, Yahuwah is our lawgiver, Yahuwah is our king. And this is where a lot of times folks stop. But what's interesting is the verse continues, and it says, he will save us. Now, here's my true confession. That was actually the part that I was looking for. I remember there is at least one or two verses, actually there are several, that include the words, he will save us. You know, the root there is Yasha, or the same root as in the name of the salvation made flesh. He will save us. Actually, Yahuwah will save us, Yahushua. And isn't it interesting that when we forget, when we lose the protections of splitting those three things up, and we end up with a tyranny, because perhaps we no longer rely on him to save us, we most need it. Well, what has that got to do with where I was headed here? You're probably thinking, he will protect us, he will save us. The issue is this. I said it's supposed to appear hopeless. The intent of Big Brother, and I think what is being allowed by the Creator, if you go through and read the prophecies and see things cycle upon cycle, building to a climax of biblical proportions. And I like to do comparisons with other things prophetically. Certainly the time of the Exodus, I think, has all kinds of parallels to here. People eventually, but not right yet, crying out because of the burdens, because of the tyrants that are ruling over them with such rigor. And I think that's the intent. The Creator is allowing us to fall into a literal trap of our own construction to the point where he will eventually be the only option to protect us. And essentially, there are so many other places, like I mentioned prophetically, where he said, look, you got all these fake gods. You think that God will save you? Oh, yeah, yeah. When the bad stuff happens, when the rubber meets the road, you call out to him. You call out to Ishtar. You call out to Molech, to Baal, to all those other fake gods, and just see how much help they are. Well, here we are. As of now, I think you'll find most of Hollywood, most of Madison Avenue, and almost all the Deep State Swamp will call out to Baal and Molech long before they'll even admit that the God of the Bible exists. But this is where we're headed. He will protect us. And I mention all of this because as we go through some of the things that I'm going to point out today and ask ourselves questions, right, always, what are we going to do? How will we deal with what's going on? How can we maintain ourselves, not only in the process of coming out of her, but doing other things the Scripture says to do? Stand, having done all to stand, be overcomers, and all kinds of similar admonitions. Touch not the unclean thing. Well, it's getting tougher and tougher. That's by design. And well, over the last few days, I had some opportunities to deal with some locals again and talk with people in the vicinity here. And one of the things that, of course, you probably have seen as well is a bunch of New Age philosophy. Oh, well, we don't care about the Bible. We might be preppers, even. We might understand that bad things are going to happen, but no, no, don't talk to me about the God of the Bible. I can do it on my own. I can do it because I've got my AR-15 and 1,000 rounds. You know, that kind of attitude. Not only that, it's all about self-actualization. A number of wonderful, good, New Agey-sounding things that I'd really much prefer to rely on rather than the God of the Bible. Well, again, I think we'll see. We'll have an opportunity to say, okay, see if that God will save you when the bad stuff happens. I was almost tempted to say a little more colloquial thing there. But here's where I'm headed, folks. Yeah, we're going to have to deal with that attitude. Yeah, we're going to have to understand how to try to build communities, how to try to work with people who don't yet at least understand what it means to know that there really is a God, that in fact, once upon a time, the entire law of the land, the supreme law even, was based on that understanding. We've lost the law because we've lost that understanding. And since Yahuwah is no longer our judge, our lawgiver, and our king, and indeed we no longer even have a rule of law with separation of powers, if he won't protect us, well, who will? Right? We already know the answer from Scripture. And when I think about dealing with these attitudes, I guess, I'm tempted to simply cut to the bottom line, and that boils down to this. I can't tell you how many times over the years that I've been involved in, ministry, dealing with constitutional issues, doing radio and so forth, I've had people come and say, okay, look, I'm a libertarian, I am an atheist libertarian, but I understand this, I like Ayn Rand and similar things, and I still don't understand or care about why you believe that we hold these truths to be self-evident is so important. And that the God who gave us life, gave us liberty, and all kinds of things that the founders knew and wrote about, but we no longer care about. It boils down to this, folks. It's supposed to appear hopeless. I truly believe, and I think you can read Scripture and come to this conclusion, that there will come a time when people will either do one of two things. They will shake their hand, shake their fist at God, and basically curse his name and suffer the consequences. Or they'll fall on their knees and admit, I can't do it myself. There's only one force in the universe at this point, whatever point that is, when each individual comes to terms with their failure, where I can't save myself. Either he will protect us, he will save us, we count on his promises, or if he doesn't, we literally don't even have a prayer anyway. So when push comes to shove, and when all of the things that I'm going to go through here over the next 40 minutes or so begin to come to a head, understand that. It is being allowed to happen. The hand of protection is being removed. I think most of us can see that. And there are a whole lot of people that aren't going to like it, aren't going to accept it, aren't going to go in the right direction. Many of them will, in fact, sadly, go to their graves. In the meanwhile, those of us who do understand and who do want to be witnesses and blow the shofar of warning, be the watchman on the wall and do all the other things the Scripture tells us to do so that we can be ready, so that we can be doing his work through what lies ahead, well, we're going to have to deal with not just skeptics and scoffers, but people who will actively not only stand in our way, but in some cases try to rat us out and destroy us because they hate the God of the Bible more than they love life and liberty and all the other things that they claim to be willing to fight for. So there is the, if you will, kind of proof text. It's supposed to appear hopeless. It will at some point appear hopeless, more so for those that don't have any hope in him. And if he doesn't protect us, just understand. Here's the argument for the atheist community out there. Look, if there is no God, you don't have a prayer anyway. By the way, if you remember, that does sound a bit like Pascal's wager. If God doesn't exist, well, you're no worse off, but if he does, then it matters. So that's the way to bet. And in that regard, I guess it's also a bit similar to the arguments of C.S. Lewis in books like Mere Christianity. All right, I've already mentioned Isaiah 33:22. When we come back after the break, eventually I'm going to get around to Isaiah chapter 25. So if you've got a Bible handy, pull that one up, bookmark it, and think about it, because that's essentially where I'm leading up to today. But the way I want to get there next is to talk about a couple of things, topics that one way or the other I'm sure we've broached on this show a number of times in the past. But I saw a great piece by John W. Whitehead at the Rutherford Institute. Usually I see him on places like Lou Rockwell, but this one's gotten some pretty wide coverage. Zero Hedge had it up as well. And it's called Techno-Tyranny. This is a topic that he's talked about. I've certainly talked about it, may have not used that same word, but definitely the metaphor is appropriate. The iron-fisted authoritarianism, says the subheading here, of the surveillance state. And that reminds me of a metaphor that I have used for a long time. It no longer even seems apropos anymore, about the iron fist of tyranny. Once upon a time, there was a velvet glove that hid it. No more, right? The velvet glove has been removed now to reveal the iron fist. And what's funny to me is most of America could care less. Oh, what's on TV? Now, Rutherford begins with a quick look back at a well-known film, the iconic 1999 Wachowski Brothers movie called The Matrix. And this is, in fact, a movie that I would suggest, if you haven't seen it, it is required viewing. There are a number of elements and things that people might disagree with, where you'd say, oh, it's bad theology or whatever it may be. But nevertheless, they do ask a lot of questions. They certainly make a lot of biblical references, even though they're not necessarily believers. But it is a great way to introduce the piece here. If you've seen the movie, you'll no doubt understand the references. Anyway, says Whitehead, this is a futuristic world in which humans exist in a computer-simulated non-reality powered by authoritarian machines. A world where the choice between existing in a denial-ridden virtual dream state on the one hand, or of facing up to the harsh, difficult realities of life comes down to taking the red pill or the blue pill, right? Everybody remembers the line that was given by Morpheus to Neo in The Matrix. He says, you take the blue pill and the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill and you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. And the question is, do you take the red pill? In our case, says Whitehead, the red pill is a one-way ticket to a life sentence in an electronic concentration camp. But here's the difference. Well, and maybe this is a bit like The Matrix, too. It's been sugar-coated to hide the bitter aftertaste, all in the name of expediency. And, oh, it's all about convenience, too. And guess what? With 5G coming real soon, you can have a blazing fast internet. Yes, you can download a movie in seconds, and your whole life can be uploaded to some NSA database even faster. Cell phone signals, never drop a call. Thermostats will keep you at the perfect temperature. You don't have to worry your pretty little head about even getting up out of your couch potato chair and adjusting it. Entertainment can be simultaneously streamed to wherever you want to be. Well, why leave the comfort of your own home? But I guess if you ever have to, you can take your cell phone with you, or maybe even have a watch that will monitor you and so forth. You're not really merely enthralled, says Whitehead, with these technologies. We have become enslaved by them. Well, gee, folks, come on, tell me something we don't know. This is news, right? Everywhere you turn, people are so addicted to their internet-connected screen devices, smartphones, tablets, computers, TVs, they can go hours at a time submerged in their virtual world, where all human interaction is replaced by the medium of technology. And no, he says, this certainly isn't freedom. All right, again, not much new in that, but here is here's the place where I'm going to start and then eventually jump off. He says, this is not really even progress. It's technological tyranny and iron-fisted control delivered by way of the surveillance state. Not only that, but also their public-private partners in the fascist economy that we now find ourselves in. Corporate giants like Google and two Facebook, and government spy agencies such as NSA. Once called No Such Agency, now it's the National Security Agency, Octung, although it really isn't about your security, it's about theirs. Anyway, all of this, he says, is about not just freedom. It's not only freedom that hangs in the balance. It's humanity itself that's on the line. And that's the jumping off point. That's one of the things that I want to explore in a bit more detail today. It's not where Whitehead intends to go, so I'll make occasional references to some of his comments here as I outline where I do want to go. But I do think this quote from Ray Kurzweil, transhumanist scientist. Now, there was a time where I had great admiration as a working engineer for Ray Kurzweil and some of the things he did. Kurzweil's grand piano was a big deal. The Kurzweil Reader, that was before he became a billionaire and kind of went off the reservation and into the e-weeds. But now he is saying the following, and the sad part is this man doesn't even see there's a problem with it. He's talking about how the human brain needs to blend, to interface with a neural network, AI, you know, global entity. He calls it the singularity. The idea is Google will eventually be able to answer the question. Well, not necessarily answer it, but they'll know it anyway, before you've even asked it. Quote, it will have read every email you'll have ever written, every document, every idle thought you've ever tapped into a search engine box. It'll know you better than your intimate partner does. Hey, we can't even say wife or spouse anymore because we've moved beyond that in the technological age. Better, perhaps, he says, even than yourself, unquote. And what are we describing here, folks? What is Kurzweil talking about? You betcha. It's a god. It's the gulag god. It's the god of the machine. It's a lot of things that we've seen coming. I have made frequent reference to another ought-to-see movie, and that's The Terminator. Not because it's the best movie of its kind ever made, but it certainly has achieved the kind of status that people can relate to and say, oh, here is the threat of Skynet, of an artificial intelligence that can, in fact, destroy humanity. Now, the Terminator movie doesn't really describe anything, and this is kind of sad to say, but it's true. Even the liquid metal Terminator that seems, oh, so threatening, the Terminator series doesn't describe anything that's even remotely as threatening, folks, as existing technology that Big Brother is already using and deploying on the battlefield. You think a Terminator that can reconstruct himself after he is blown apart by the Arnold Schwarzenegger good Terminator with a 12-gauge slug? You think that's scary? How about a whole bunch of autonomous but connected drone Terminators, each with a single-minded purpose to kill whomever, you. And they can come in contact with you and blow you up. They can fly faster than the Terminator robot in the movies can run, and they can be controlled by an artificial intelligence, which, yes, as Kurzweil and so many of the other multi-billionaires are wishing and hoping to achieve, it can be godlike in its intelligence, its omnipotence. There's more, though. The catch is that it's not just Big Brother and all of its interconnected agencies and the AI world controller, NSA, everybody else will know you better than you know yourself. Bill Binney, one of the highest level whistleblowers ever to emerge from the NSA, said, the ultimate goal of the NSA, well, the ultimate goal, folks, of all of these technologies and the people that are trying to build their replacement god is total population control. So, cue next the dawning of the, no, not age of Aquarius, although there is a certain disgusting relationship, the age of the Internet of Things, where all kinds of Internet-connected things will monitor your home, your health, your habits, your innermost thoughts. And at least allegedly, you good little slave, you, your pantry will stay stocked, your utilities will be regulated, we won't let you be too cold, but we'll decide whether you need any heat or whether you're allowed to run the air conditioner or not. Your life will be totally under control and worry-free. Well, that is, as long as you're a good little slave and your socialist credit score stays too high. Now, here's where we go to the break with a quick note on that score. And again, I'm going to branch off and point several other things out that I don't think we can repeat too often. By 2020, says Whitehead, the Internet of Things will have adopted enough of an acceptance in the society that, here we go, there will be 152 million cars, they think, connected to the Internet by then. Well, there's a lot already are, but it'll do more than just let you play music. 100 million Internet-connected bulbs and lamps. That's just a year or so away. By 2021, there will be an estimated 240 million wearable devices, all connected to the Internet of Things, such as smartwatches. And it'll connect users in real time, not just phones, emails, and text messages, but to the Internet. And yes, it will monitor your health and whether you're taking your meds, all kinds of stuff. By 2022, there will be 1.1 billion smart meters installed in homes, reporting real-time utility usage to the companies that, for now at least, provide your power, unless you're off-grid, and to other interested parties. There are more and more of those. But the bigger question is, what else is going on besides? So we'll pick it up there when we get back. We are back. The show is the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call. And today, what I'm talking about is, I guess you would have to call it, the real battle. And yes, folks, the whole point so far as the Big Brother connected AI-enabled end-of-the-world-generating beast machine is that it's supposed to appear hopeless. You're supposed to look at what's coming and say, you can't possibly fight it. No, you not only can't fight City Hall, you can't fight the biggest brother the world has not only ever known, but ever even conceived of. And that's the goal here. Now, I alluded to this, but I'm going to just lay it out right here so that there's no doubt about where I'm headed. The point of the world's controlling AI, the technocracy, the automatic and completely controlling entity, Skynet, name it what you want. John W. Whitehead calls it techno-tyranny, the iron-fisted authoritarianism of the surveillance state. But the key here is that there's a whole lot more than surveillance going on. And I will contend, this is not the first time I've mentioned this, but it certainly does bear repeating as well, that what we're really seeing here is the real battle that dates all the way back to Genesis chapter 3. And if you haven't looked at that story, I'd encourage you to go back and reread it, because it is so appropriate to what precisely is happening today. It involves this thing that Scripture calls the Nechash. Which it gets translated as serpent, but I don't know that it's a serpent like we've ever seen, because obviously, if you read the end of Genesis chapter 3, some things happen to Nechash, and he seems to change form a bit. He does seem to have the ability to talk prior to this, not clear afterwards, but nevertheless, Nechash has a lot more, I think, in common with the beast state and the coming AI than it does with the modern snake that we tend to think of. Right, and we also see in Genesis 3 the genesis of the first two and biggest lies in all of human history. Genesis 3, 4, and 5. You will not surely die, and furthermore, you can be like God. Now, how does that relate to it's supposed to appear hopeless? And what the Ray Kurzweils, Bill Gates, and Zuckerbergs of the world, utopian socialist billionaires, are trying to bring about? In the form of an automated AI, an artificial intelligence that can literally be like God and not die? Oh, well, there you go. And hey, if you can do what they want to do and download your consciousness, they won't use the word soul as a general rule because it sounds too much like something that another God that they don't like might have created. But whatever it is that is your essence, maybe you can translate that into the machine too, load it into some kind of a virtual e-world. And you can have all the perverted sex and all the food and all the, you know, whatever it is you want, right? You can be like God. You will not die, and it can be wonderful forever. Amen. Except maybe if you think about, another biblical prophecy about people wishing to die and can't. Imagine if you get in there and it turns out not to be quite the heaven that you thought or were sold, but a little bit more like not just the Matrix, but something even worse, okay? Could be really nasty. As for me and my house, I don't want to go into the machine. I accept that those two big lies are exactly what they are. But still, you can see the parallels here. And what I'm suggesting is the following. The real battle is there are a whole lot of people that are seeking to create a better God, one in their own image, than the one that the Bible tells us about. And then it all fits, right? You can be like God. Well, you can create a better God. You will not die. You can do all these things. Well, wait a minute. How does all of that go back to the technological age and the things that Whitehead was talking about with their surveillance society and so forth? Well, think of it this way. All right, what is it that we are told are the characteristics, right? This is Theology 101 of the God of the Bible. He's omnipotent, he's omniscient, he's omnipresent. He has all these omni characteristics. Basically, he can do all kinds of things that at least a lot of folks would say, no, the devil, the bad guy, old Scratch, Ha-Satan, the adversary, he can't do. Lucifer, Satan, the devil, he's not omnipotent. He's not omniscient. He doesn't know all and see all. He may know quite a bit, but he can't be everywhere at once. He can't see everything at once. He's not omnipresent either. Oh, well, wait a minute. Enter the Internet of Things. Enter 5G and the connection of trillions of devices, ultimately, that will monitor you and everybody you know, and it will know your thoughts before you do. Isn't that the very definition of an omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent God? No wonder they're so anxious to create something that's a far better God, so far as they're concerned, than the one that actually holds them to task for the kinds of things that they're not supposed to do, including the idolatry of thinking they can be like God, not die, and create a better God to boot. Isn't that why it is that there is so much of an effort towards trans everything, from transgenderism to transhumanism? Why, man can improve on God's creation and recreate himself in his own image. Saw a disgusting story earlier this week. NCAA no longer has women's athletics. They might as well admit it. They have a transgender. We can be better. We'll make a better woman. What are we going to do? Take a man and let him compete. Oh, but we don't call it a man. He identifies as a woman. So basically, he won a track and field meet and in, I think it was 400-meter hurdles, beat the next closest actual woman by a full second. Yeah, they knew it. The race was hopeless before it started. You see, mankind really can create better people than the ones that God created. At least that's what they're going to tell us. You're starting to get the point. It's supposed to appear hopeless. People are supposed to be demoralized and say you can't possibly, you can't even stay human so far as they're concerned. Now, when we went to break, I was reading some of the statistics that Whitehead was relaying in his article about techno-tyranny and the fact that, you know, there's going to be over 150 million cars connected to the Internet by next year, all kinds of light bulbs that will monitor your usage, wearable devices, smartwatches that will keep tabs on your pulse rate and whether you're taking your meds and where you are and whether you're a little overweight, maybe your insurance company, I don't know about that. Who knows, folks? But all kinds of things going on. And 1.1 billion smart meters installed in homes. A lot of folks don't like the idea of a smart meter. I don't want a smart meter attached here because, well, we're going to talk about 5G as well in just a second. It does a lot of things that you probably don't want done, including irradiating you. And you can't turn it off. Isn't that the beauty of it? Says Whitehead, the connected industry. This is what 5G is promising. Estimated to add more than $14 trillion to the economy. Who could be again that? By 2020, is about to be the next big thing in terms of societal transformations, right up there with the Industrial Revolution, a watershed moment in technology and culture. And, there will be eventually a time when cars that have steering wheels, accelerator pedals, and brakes will be banned because they'll be driverless. And you won't be able to control them because you're not fit to control them anymore. You're not transhuman enough, I guess. He points to some science fiction authors that have been talking about this for a long time and makes this comment, and I thought this was interesting and certainly goes where I want to go. By the way, says Whitehead, there's no such thing as a driverless car. Understand, someone or something will be driving. It just won't be you. And there is part of the problem. Now, you know how it's going to be sold. I won't go into the many paragraphs he listed here of how your house will be more thoughtful and conscious of you, and it'll be more politically correct. If it senses that something is wrong, it can, offer you solace. Your coffee maker
Relying on data from your fitness and sleep sensors will brew a stronger pot of coffee for you in the morning if you've had a restless night. Now, I read that, and I'm thinking, hey, once they put 5G into your neighborhood and then interferes with your sleep patterns, you can be assured you'll be having a lot of restless nights. So what will your house say? Well, we're going to not only brew you a stronger pot of coffee, but probably better prescribe you some drugs to help fix the problem that the 5G caused that we're not going to admit. And if you do find out about it, well, we'll know before you know, and we'll cut off your access to the information. You can just imagine where all this is headed, right? Nest, which is Google's new $3 billion acquisition, is at the forefront of the connected industry. And it's going to have all kinds of wonderful things. A smart lock, it'll know whether your house is occupied or not. By the way, so will the hackers. They'll know. Big Brother will know. Isn't this funny? There's even a discussion in here about the fact that the Internet of Things, which will have all kinds of electronic devices communicating with one another, including things you wouldn't normally think would need to communicate, like your Lazy Boy recliner or your couch. Well, I guess if you're a couch potato, the couch needs to rat you out so that the refrigerator can cut you off and the toaster can refuse to make whatever you want in the way of a Pop-Tart. Or maybe just mandate that UPS would deliver a nurse and, inject you with something to fix the problem. Again, all kinds of nastiness here. I mentioned the 5G. I'm going to go there just briefly. The real issue with 5G, of course, isn't that you'll be able to download a movie faster. That's how it'll be sold. Yes, your home will be more convenient. But the real problem with 5G is, and as an engineer, I can go way back on this one and wax nerdy, but I won't, simply to say that the frequencies involved here, as bad as existing cell phone technology, 3G, for example, might be, Wi-Fi and so forth, that have already been demonstrated to have some neural effects. If you're exposed at night, they can interfere with production of melatonin and your ability to sleep. So, yeah, turn your Wi-Fi off at night. But they operate in the 1 to 2 to 5 gigahertz range. The new frequencies will be 10 to 50 times higher than that, up in the closer to 100 gigahertz range. And what that means is that they're what's called millimeter wavelengths. In other words, the wavelengths are now so tiny, well, that's how they can be so much faster, and that's how come it is you can build all kinds of much smaller devices, and they can communicate and rat you out and so forth. Your socks and your underwear can all talk and tell all the Big Brother connected devices where you're walking at any given time. Who needs facial recognition with that kind of technology? But worse still, these millimeter wavelengths are on the same order of size as the pores in your skin. The receptors that provide things like feedback of temperature and heat and pain. And they're already being used. 95 gigahertz is the frequency being used by the military for area denial weapons, active denial systems that can literally cause people to think they're on fire and run like hell. And basically all you have to do is understand when you're talking about the same frequency ranges here, just crank up the power a bit and you can produce whatever effects you want. Yes, it is indeed all about control. And it's far more than about the loss of privacy. And that's the point at which, while Whitehead makes a wonderful point in his story, and he points out, it is a lot more than loss of privacy or freedom that we're talking about here. Humanity itself's on the line. There is this whole much bigger aspect to it. To produce a God that is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, you need the Internet of Things. You have to have every device in your house talking to each other and talking about you. So that, in fact, the satanic AI overlord that they seem to be really hell-bent on creating can know everything about everybody all the time. Isn't that wonderful? And again, if you go back and compare that to The Matrix or to The Terminator and Skynet, sadly, they make a good point. Otherwise, if it was quite as hopeless as they intend to make it, there'd be no point in the movie. Neo would have been killed before he ever decided to take any pill, and Skynet would have simply sent a swarm of Terminator drones to kill John Connor rather than Arnold Schwarzenegger. The story would never have had a chance to happen to begin with. Says Whitehead. Now, here's where we're going to branch off for a second. Ingestible or implantable chips, too. They're a good example, he says, of how unprepared we are, morally and otherwise, to navigate what's coming. Uncharted terrain.
hailed as a revolutionary breakthrough because they can access, analyze, and manipulate your body from the inside. They can remind you to take your medications. They can cure your cancer. Well, if they choose to, and if they don't want to because your socialist credit score isn't high enough, they can kill you or even send an alert to your doctor warning of an impending heart attack. Yeah, the technology could save lives, but is that all we need to know? Have we done our due diligence? He quotes people who are asking, and that would include your host, how can patients be assured the technology won't be used to do not as benign things, like compel them to take medications they don't want to take? Folks, you've already got a communist mayor in New York, de Blasio, that is saying, we'll bend you over a gurney, strap you down, and inject you with a vaccine if we feel like it. Big Brother owns you, you slave, you. So far, all they're doing to show people whose boss is fining them $1,000 for not being a good little slave of the New York police state. Don't worry. All of that fines are always backed up by the power of the gun, or in this case, the power of the needle. But the end result can be death either way. What started as a voluntary experiment in so many cases, whether you're thinking about the IRS or take your drugs or else, could it erode civil liberties? Yeah, count on it. It's a lot more than that. So, again, where I'm breaking off from some of this is, as bad as things have been, the NSA. Okay, so here we have Whitehead saying, oh, you know, if you were shocked by Ed Snowden's revelations about how NSA used surveillance to spy on Americans, phone calls, emails, text messages, can you imagine what an unscrupulous government agent or entity or AI could do with access to everything and every, well, literally everything. Everything in your home, everything in your car, everything that you're wearing. It's all in the plan. Forbes calls this a data pipeline to our intimate bodily processes. And Whitehead fears we're being set up for a brave new world where there's nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. Imagine what SWAT teams could do, yada, 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 okay? You don't have to imagine, folks. Again, we've been warned by the agents of Hollywood what they've got planned, whether it's the Matrix or the Terminator or a Minority Report for a long time. The problem, says Whitehead, is public response to all of this. Government surveillance, Big Brother is watching you, and Orwell had the right idea, but he didn't go far enough, has amounted to a collective shrug. Who cares if government can track your whereabouts on a GPS-enabled device like your phone, as long as it's more convenient? Who cares if NSA is listening to your phone calls? I got nothing to hide. I'm a good little Nazi. Heil Hitler, right? Isn't that what people will have? It'll be Heil somebody else. Heil Hitler-y, maybe. They can download your emails, but don't worry, I get fast service and I can download a movie too. Who cares if the government can monitor your activities in your home by tapping into all of your internet-connected devices? So long as you don't have to get up off the couch to change the channel or increase the temperature, well, if Big Brother lets you. And who cares if 5G, now he didn't say this, I will. Who cares if the 5G that they're going to slam into your house, whether you like it or not, and guess what, if you're in a suburban area or one of the major cities, I guarantee you, you're not going to have a choice any more than if you're in New York and you don't want to be injected by one of de Blasio's goons. So who cares, I guess you could say, if the 5G not only causes skin lesions or other problems, interrupts your sleep patterns, perhaps. And yes, the studies are already showing that it can do this. The wavelengths are small enough that they can even have direct impacts on cellular DNA as well. Break the chains. Alter your DNA literally. Certainly your health. And maybe even kill you. I would contend that given that they already know, and it's been well documented, of the effects that the military has been using for weaponry, there's no, oh, we don't know the health effects yet. They know the health effects darn well. And when there's $17 trillion at stake, I guarantee you, you're not going to hear the truth. And if you do know the truth, well, Two-Face Book and Gulag will be able to ban you, shut you up, and cut you off anyway. Can you see how the whole thing comes together? It's supposed to appear hopeless. And then, says Whitehead, when you add in the fusion centers, the real crime centers, the real-time crime centers, but they're centers of real crime, citywide surveillance networks, data clouds conveniently hosted by Amazon and Microsoft and Gulag and others, drones equipped with thermal imaging cameras and that can act autonomously and in swarms in some cases, biometric databases, you've got the makings of a world where privacy is reserved exclusively for government agencies, yeah, and coup plotters. All this goes right down to our genes. And yeah, Google works openly with NSA. Amazon's built their $600 million intelligence database for CIA, so forth and so on. The key here is control. And he quotes Orwell, who understood this. His masterpiece, 1984, portrayed a global society of total control with the thought police and so forth. Well, imagine, folks, if the thought police was an automated, autonomous artificial intelligence that had access to the kind of information that, a satanic, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent God alone could have. The goal? They're getting to a point where it is supposed to appear hopeless. The Internet of Things is Big Brother in just a more appealing disguise, says Whitehead. But what's necessary to understand is the following. Okay? Oh, and by the way, I'm not a Luddite. I had a little article here I was going to go through about what a Luddite really was, English textile workers and so forth. Back in Britain in the early 1800s, it's not about being anti-technology. In other words, the Luddites were concerned about what technology was going to do to their job, so they destroyed textile machines. Now, if you recognize the dangers of things we're being exposed to, they're referred to as a Luddite or a technophobe. The rest of us that are paying attention, who do understand a little bit about science and technology, should rightfully be concerned about, well, what genetically modified frankenfoods are doing to your immune system, to your DNA, and what the 5G Internet of Things that is planned is not only going to do to your privacy, forget your privacy, you haven't had that for a while, what it's going to do to your very body and lives. So since I suggested for the last 50 minutes or so that the goal here is that it is supposed to appear hopeless, and that, even Scripture is outlining a situation where things build to a climax, the likes of which the world has never seen before. You could call it a tribulation period if you want. It's even suggested that Big Brother will know who you are, where you are, what you're doing, and if you don't have his permission to live, you won't be able to buy or sell or probably even breathe. So, yeah, obviously one of the things we do is come out of her now. But I promised that we would take a look at Isaiah 25. Now, I'm not going to have time to read the whole chapter here, but I would suggest that you take a look at this because, essentially, it does describe not only the negative aspects of what we've just been going through, but the hope as well. By the way, so does the book of Revelation, especially the first couple chapters in there. Oh, you, Yahuwah, are my Elohim, my God. I will exalt you. I'll praise your name, for you've done many wonderful things. Counsels of old, yours, faithfulness and truth. You've made a city a ruin, a fortified city a ruin. Basically, a lot of nasty stuff is described. Things we may be seeing now, but it says that there will come a time. It'll be in that day. Behold, people will say, this is our God. We've waited for him, and he will save us. No, not the AI, Skynet, Internet of Things, world-controlling, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, satanic God of man, but the God of the Bible who's been there all along and been warning us about exactly what we're seeing happening now. If we'll just pick up his book and read it, all of our lives. He will save us. This is Yahuwah. We've waited for him. We will be glad and rejoice in his salvation. That same root word there, Yeshua T. For on this mountain the hand of Yahuwah will rest, and all these things will happen. The fortress of the high fort of your walls he will bring down. He's talking to those who are attempting to do exactly what we're seeing going on now. There's the good news. Now, finally, and lastly, but certainly not leastly, if you look at what is, in fact, probably, especially if people have never understood the Torah, and they don't recognize all the references in here, a confusing set of prophecies, and I'm talking about the book of Revelation, I will contend you really can't understand the Revelation until you understand the Torah and the prophecies that lead up to it. But one of the predominating themes in the first few chapters, I'm going to just read a couple of the verses where the same set of words appear, because it's a very hopeful way to wrap up today. Revelation 2:11. These are letters to the churches, Ephesus and elsewhere. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. A couple verses later, he who overcomes and keeps my works until the end, to him I will give power over the nations. He who overcomes, says the next chapter, shall be clothed in white garments. I won't blot out his name from the book of life, but confess him before my Father and the angels. 3:12, he who overcomes, I'll make him a pillar in the temple of my Elohim. He who overcomes, finally, says chapter 21, shall inherit all things, and I will be his Elohim, and he shall be my son. So there's a whole lot of references here to overcoming what's going on, and the key I will suggest is to understand no. It's supposed to appear hopeless. We're not able to do it in our own power. It does matter entirely who we serve. And, folks, there has never been a more important time to get that straight, to understand, yeah, there are things we can do and should be doing in terms of coming out of her. But there comes a point at which we realize, unless we know who we serve, literally, those who don't have a prayer. And one of the things we need to learn to do in the meanwhile is to show others by our fruit why we're not hopeless. Because we have better promises and know who we serve. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.